reading while I've been gone. All right, Exodus, as an introduction, the placement of it, volume 2 of 5. What am I talking about and why?
Yeah.
The five
Yeah, those
the Pentateuch. Yes, the five books Moses wrote. That's what you said? Yes, the five books Moses wrote. Right, volume 2. Volume 1 is?
Genesis.
Okay. Now, why would I say that? Or prove it?
It goes right after what was just said in Genesis, so that would be part 2.
Yes. Look in verse 1. If you're writing an independent, totally non-connected to any other book, would you start it with, now, these are the names of the son? No, this is, you start reading this verse 1 of chapter 1 of this book, and it makes no sense unless it's connected to another book. Now, these are the names of the sons of Israel. Verse 8, now a new king arose over Egypt. Chapter 2, verse 1. Now a man from the house of Levi. It keeps on continuing, and this word now is a connecting word. Turn to Leviticus chapter 1, verse 1. Then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him. Again, it's just continuing the story. Numbers chapter 1, verse 1 also says, Then the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. Deuteronomy doesn't say then, but we know it's connected. Okay, so we have volume 2 of 5. The author. Moses is the author, according to the inspired author, Mark. Go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 7. Not Luke 7, but Mark 7. Mark 7, verse 9, you are experts at setting aside the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition, for Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and he who speaks evil of father and mother is to be put to death. But you say, if a man says, Korban. Okay. Who says, and then he quotes from Exodus chapter 20, the Ten Commandments, Moses says it. Okay. And then chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 26, regarding the fact that the dead rise again, have you not read in the book of Moses in that passage about the burning bush, how God spoke to him, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. The burning bush episode. Who wrote about that? Moses did. What book does that take place in? Exodus. Okay. Now, the reason why I bring all that up is because of, you may remember this. Maybe you don't remember that. Some of you remember that. The young minds remember it. Okay, so, JDEP. Around the 1700s, somebody came up with the idea when scholasticism was increasing and people were getting smarter than they should have gotten. They said, hey, wait a minute, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, and Deuteronomy weren't written by Moses. They were written by four different authors and all compiled. And so you ask them, okay, present who wrote what, and this is what you get. Or if this isn't simple enough for you, try that one. Okay? So you have the Yahwehist. He wrote Yahweh. You have the Deuteronomist, which is D. Here it's the redactor. The Priestly and the Elohist, using different names, different terms. So here's the deal. This is what you're stuck with the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. Either Moses wrote them, as the inspired author Mark writes, or this theory that is too complicated to figure out, that was developed only in the 1700s, and that people who believed this have since turned around and said, no, that's not true. You can believe this, or you can believe that. What are you going to do? I'll believe the inspired author. Even if the author wasn't inspired, even if he weren't inspired, this is too complicated. God doesn't, you have to have a PhD just to understand who wrote the book. Okay, the date. Skip this part, because I've made this part confusing, and I didn't have time to edit it. So don't read that for right now. Just read the date. When was Moses 2, Moses 2, Moses volume 2. When was it written? Anyone? Horeb. Is that what you said? Mount Horeb. Yes. Date. Ooh, nice job. 1445 is what he said. Yeah, that's that. Where'd you get that number? Up there? Is it? Okay. So, I'll say 1450 because I like to. And I think there's a little bit of evidence for it. But when we're dealing with 1400 years before B.C., before Christ, then, you know, what's 5 years between friends? All right. So, I'll go down here and say 1450 B.C. Look in 1 Kings chapter 6. First Kings 6, verse 1, it came about 480th year. In the 480th year, after the sons of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel. So, when did Solomon begin to reign? We go over our dates. This is where I'm not going over the dates, but you hopefully remember them. When did Solomon begin to reign? Yes, there are four periods of 40 years. Saul began reigning in 1055. And then you got 40 years later, David begins reigning in 1015. And then Solomon begins reigning in 975. So 975 minus 4, because it's in the fourth year, plus 480, and you come up with 1451, actually. Okay? So that's why. Here's this date, 1451. There's another date, 1260. Where this date comes from is several times in this book, Ramses is mentioned. Except, according to what we've uncovered so far, there was no Ramses until 1279 to 1213 BC, and we know who has reigned in the other times. So they say, hey, wait a minute, Ramses didn't live in 1450, so it must be later. But here's the issue. Look in Genesis chapter 14. Genesis 14, verse 14. When Abram, heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as who? It says Dan. Who was Dan? Who would Dan be later on, many years from now? One of the 12 tribes. In other words, some of this is written understanding what the Jews understood at this time. Okay? It's been edited, if you will. So, Ramses II, that might have been put in there later, or Moses is writing it, they're understanding who Ramses would be. Just because it says Ramses doesn't mean it's written when Ramses was alive, okay? Or the events took place then. So 1450 B.C. Comment or question on that?
So like Lewis and Clark in the Pacific Ocean, okay, in Washington State and Oregon State, but it wasn't Washington, Oregon.
Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay, now, let's go back up to the confusing part, if that wasn't confusing enough already. How old was Moses when he led Israel when he died? How old was Moses when he died? Old. 120. Again, easy numbers here, 40, 40, 40. Okay, so he's 120. How old was he? 120 minus 40. When he led Israel out of Egypt? 80. Okay. How old was he when he was born? Right. All right. So, the events that we read of when the book takes place, when it opens, is actually 80 years. Exodus covers 80 years. Okay. At the book open, it's 80 years before the Exodus occurs. So, it is either 565 years since Genesis 12... and 350 years since entering Egypt, or 350 years since Genesis 12, and 135 since entering Egypt. Depends on what you think of the numbers. I'm not here to argue either way, but just be aware of that. In Exodus 12:41, look at this quickly, while talking about the date. In Exodus 12:41, at the end of 430 years, to the very day, all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. Verse 40 said, the land that the sons of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years, the time, I should have said. Okay, the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, and the Samaritan Pentateuch, in all its manuscripts and printed copies, reads the Exodus 12. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel and their fathers, which they sojourned in the land of Canaan and in Egypt, was 430 years. So whether you think they were in Egypt for 215 years, or 430, either way, it was a long time. Anybody have the inspired answer here? Okay. Here's the outline. Chapter 1 through 12, Israel in Egypt. 12 through 18, Israel en route to Sinai. And 19 through Numbers 10. So chapter 19 in the book of Exodus is when they arrive at Sinai. Numbers chapter 10 is when they leave. They are there at Sinai for 11 months. They leave Egypt and leave Sinai 1 year and 2 months later. Okay, so they leave Sinai 1 year, 2 months after they get to Sinai. Now, here's the educational part of it. The age of the earth this time, depending on whose numbers you run, the earth is somewhere around 2,500 years old. Okay, so Adam and Eve, plus 2,500 years, and here we are. Roughly 800 years since the flood, and 450 years since Babel. That's where we are. Morality on the earth is depraved. Romans 1 talks about this. They rejected God, they went further, they rejected him, they go further. So God handed them over to the depravity of their mind. The depravity of their mind, it says. There are numerous moral codes. There is the Egyptian Maat, or Maat, I don't speak Egyptian. There's the Sumerian code of Ur-Nammu. There's the Babylonian, which would have been a little further east than the Sumerians for this distinction here. The code of Hammurabi, you've probably heard of that. There's the Hindu Rig Veda, which is still very popular today. And there's the Celtic code. Now this is all of what we would call Asia and Europe right here, and into Egypt, okay? So this is where all the people are. Here are the major moral codes. In other words, people don't know what. If you have all the different moral codes, then people don't know. Sorry? Okay. There's religion on the earth, many gods. For example, in Exodus chapter 5, verse 2, I'm just saying be aware of this when we go through Exodus. Exodus chapter 5, verse 2, the Lord said, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? So, there are many gods, and there's much confusion in who is the real God. And if you reject the real God, then you also throw out his standard. I'll put it that way, his word, his standard, his moral code. So when you have the Egyptian Maat and the Sumerian code of Ur-Nammu and the Babylonian code of Hammurabi, by the way, when Abram took his wife down into Egypt, he lied to them about whether or not she was his wife. Why? They would kill him. They would rather murder than what? Commit adultery. And you see, they don't know what's right or wrong. You shouldn't do either, but they don't know that. They think that according to the Egyptian Maat, that, oh, okay, it's okay to murder, in certain circumstances apparently, but you better not commit adultery. Whereas God would say, no, you don't do either. So, 2,500 years since the beginning of the earth. Morality on earth is, they don't have a clue what's going on. What do? Who do we worship? By the way, what does this sound like today? No change. Humans are so different. Not at all. Religion on the earth, many gods. So we can look for reintroducing the one true God, Jehovah, to the world. Exodus 9. This is what God will do. This is the story. I'm telling you what the story is before we get into the story. Exodus 9:16. Well, verse 15. If by now I had put forth my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, you would have been cut off from the earth. This is God talking to Pharaoh. Pharaoh, I could have wiped you clean off the face of the earth, but I didn't. Why not? Verse 16. Indeed, for this reason I have allowed you to remain, in order that to show my power, in order that to proclaim my name through all the earth. Exodus is a story about going to school. That's what it's about. And by the way, you remember Jethro? Who is Jethro? Moses' father-in-law. Yeah, I knew that's what you meant. Moses' father-in-law. When Moses leads the people out, he gets in contact with Jethro. And what does Jethro say? Chapter 18, verse 11. Now I know that Jehovah is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people. You see, the world has been to school. Rahab will know who the real God is, so on and so forth. The true moral code, the Ten Commandments beginning with, and the rest of the books of Moses. Turn to Deuteronomy 8. Not only does the law, as the Jews would call it, not only is it applicable to the Jews, but it's also applicable to all of the world. At least its morals were, okay? I'm not saying the ceremonial aspect of the law of Moses. Its morals were. Deuteronomy 4, verse 5. I have taught you statutes and judgments just as the Lord my God commanded me that you should do thus in the land where you are entering to possess it. Keep them and do them, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples. Who will hear all these great statutes? Sorry, I answered it great from the line below. Who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near it as the Jehovah, our God, whenever we call him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law, which I am setting up before you today? In other words, the Jews are going to have the law of Moses. And other nations are going to look at them and say, wow, look at that law. What other nation has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law? How do we live right? Remember, they don't know how to live right. The Jews are going to have the key on how to live right. Remember the Queen of Sheba came and visited whom? Solomon. She comes up and in it, first Kings 9, I think it is, she says, you're a great king, you have a great God who put you on the earth to execute justice. To execute justice. That's your purpose. So she sees the purpose of this law. Romans 2, go ahead, flip there. It'd be worth our time to flip there. In Romans 2, 1,500 years later, Paul is arguing that the Jews did need the gospel. And the Jews said, no, we're Jews. You forget who we are, Paul. We're Jews. And that should get us saved because we've got the law. And Paul's saying, no, the law won't save you. But listen to this, chapter 2, verse 17 of Romans. If you bear the name Jew and rely upon the law and boast in God and know his will and approve the things that are essential, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that you yourself are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, a corrector of the foolish, a teacher of the immature, having in the law the embodiment of knowledge and of truth. Read that one passage right there, and what do you understand the Jews were supposed to be doing? Teaching the foolish. We can summarize it with, they were a light to the world. That's what the Jews were as a nation with this law. That's part of what they were. So, here's the education. In the book of Exodus, we're going to see the Lord reintroducing himself. I'm Jehovah. I'm the only God. We're going to see him reintroducing the one true moral standard. Here's how you behave. And at the same time, re-readying the world to accept the one true Savior, Jesus Christ. Where is the first prophecy of the Savior? Where do we find it? Genesis 3:15. When was Genesis 3:15 written? Right now. So we are re-readying Moses in writing the Exodus and the events going on in Exodus. He's re-readying the world to accept the one true Savior, Jesus Christ. Genesis 3:12. What's Genesis 3 say?
It's the seed promise.
Yes. His seed, excuse me, your seed will defeat his seed. Anybody know Genesis 12 as he's turning to Genesis 3? Okay, turn to Genesis 12, would you? George? Yeah, please. Or do you have your hand in your book somewhere else? Okay. And then Genesis 49. Go ahead, read Genesis 3.
And I will put enmity between you and woman, between her seed and your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and he shall bruise him on the head.
Okay, there's number one. Genesis 12, 1 through 3. George, please.
Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and curse the ones who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed.
Okay, a reference, a veiled reference to the Christ. And then Genesis 49:10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah until the ruler's staff from between his legs, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples, talking about the Christ. Okay, by the way, does anybody recognize this chart? A few months ago, okay, brotherly love, Yahweh's eternal will for the man on earth. But brotherly love, when I did the chart, none of this stuff was over there as it went across the top, and then it went down. People rejected Jehovah and forgot brotherly love, okay? So, this I presented this chart in the context of a minor prophet study. I forget which one. It might have been actually a major prophet. I don't know, but it was one of the major or minor prophets. And it was about why or the purpose, the role of the nation of Israel, and whether or not we should look for it in the future still. 2012, should we look for it in the future still? And I argued, I could be wrong, but I argued that we should not look for the restoration of physical Israel into Jerusalem in the future. My argument, part of it, was this. People forgot Jehovah and didn't know how to love brotherly. That's what I've been talking about so far today. Nothing new there. Enter Israel to prove Jehovah. Remember, God says, we just read it, that when Israel walks out of this land, all the world will know that I am Jehovah. To provide for a Savior, if you read Luke 24:44, it says, everything that's written in the law of the prophets is about me. Not everything, but I paraphrase. And to demonstrate brotherly love. Leviticus 19:16, love your neighbor as yourself. Deuteronomy 4, which we just read, all the world should see that. So, of course, I argued that the first one, proving Jehovah, had to happen again and again and again. Remember, with Babylon, with Jesus again. Provide for a Savior. That was fulfilled with Jesus when he came. And demonstrate brotherly love. Romans chapter 2, verse 24, which we just read, or went on to, we're about to go on to read, says that they missed it when it came to that. So God rejected them. Jesus did the same thing in the church. The reason I bring up this chart is this. If you thought that our discussion about whether or not there is going to be a literal earthly return of Jesus to Jerusalem and the Jews restored to Jerusalem, if you thought that discussion was over, it's not. Because we're talking about it always, basically when we come out of the book of Genesis. And even when you're in the book of Genesis, when it's talking about the land promises. Comments? Questions? Okay. If you do, maybe later you can get with me and talk with me. Wasn't that a fun introduction to the book of Exodus? Maybe a mouthful. I'm guessing that not many people have their questions for Exodus answers for... No, that's fine. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? That was 4,500 miles ago. Okay. Let's go into, and we're just going to cover the first book, the first chapter of Exodus for now. Verse 1, these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob. They came each one with his household, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. All the persons who came from the loins of Jacob were 70 in number, but Joseph was already in Egypt. Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. But the sons of Israel were fruitful, increased greatly, multiplied, became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. Okay, verses 1 through 5 is what had happened in Genesis. Verse 6 brings it up to the audience, making it relevant to them. All of them died, Joseph and his brothers, that generation, they died. But by the end of verse 7, the sons of Israel were fruitful, and the land was filled with them. And the Israelites who are reading this look around and say, oh yeah, that's talking about us. A couple points from this real quick. First of all, God makes real promises. He had said in Genesis chapter 12 that he would make them a great nation. George just read it. I'll make you a great nation. Here we are in Exodus, some 500 years later at the most. What is it? Israel. Oh, by the way, the New American Standard, what I read out of, in verse 1 says, these are the names of the sons of Israel. In verse 7, but the sons of Israel were fruitful. Literally, both expressions are exactly the same. The ESV translates verse 7, but the people of Israel. And the difference is a slight nuance. Not all the time, but very often when the word people or peoples is used, it refers to a nation. In other words, these are the sons went down into Egypt, but a whole nation came back up out of Egypt would be the idea. God said, I'll make you a great nation, and he sure has. The point is, you can trust him when he says something. You ever hear of a politician who made a promise and then didn't keep it? God is no politician. You can trust him. You can believe him. And then real power. Turn to chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 37. The sons of Israel, this is actually another 80 years later from what we just read. The sons of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, aside from children. Okay, if there's 600,000 men on foot, that is probably referring to a military, okay? The soldiers, not including the children and the old men and the women and the babies, okay? So people estimate that to be around, actually 1,900. I scaled it back 400,000 because I wanted to. No other reason than that. So from 70 to 1,500 people. If it was 215 years that they were in Egypt, our current world average growth rate is 1.17. In 215 years, it should have been 2,580 people. If they went from 70, 215 years later, according to our average now growth rate, it should have been 2,580 people. They're at 1,500,000. If it was 430 years, then the growth rate would have got them to 96,780. Still a huge difference. This is a growth rate not of 1.17, but of 4.9%. Yeah, they were increasing rapidly. What does it say? They were fruitful, increasing greatly, multiplied, became exceedingly mighty, so the land was filled with them. Every time that's saying, yes, they were getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, a nation. This is what our God can do. So the point of it is this. I read this the other day at William Stewart's house. Don't tell your God how big your problem is. Tell your problem how big your God is. Cliche, but oh so true. Here's the application. You've got a problem in your life? Go to God. Know that He can take care of that problem. If you're running into financial problems, spousal problems, children problems, whatever it might be. At the same time, don't forget that if you're having a problem with yourself, You're not becoming the person you should be. Remember this, it's not God's fault. If you just accept His help, you will become the person that He wants you to become. Now, any comment or question? If not, we'll go on. Chapter 1, verse 15. I just skipped a whole bunch, didn't I? That's not important, no. Chapter 1, verse 8. A new king rose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war, they will also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us, and," here's his greatest fear, "depart from the land." Now that's funny, because what happens? His greatest fear, they depart from the land. So they appointed taskmasters. By the way, that's what he doesn't want to happen. So that's what he's going to fight to keep. So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. And they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel. You see, if you're fighting against God's plan, guess what's not going to happen? Whatever you want to happen. God will just overcome it. The Egyptians compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously, and they made their lives bitter with hard work in mortar and bricks and all kinds of labor in the field, all of their labors which they rigorously imposed upon them. This is the first point I want to make from this, real history. You see this little word in there? They built, in verse 11, they built for Pharaoh Pithom and Ramses. Anybody know who Herodotus is? He was a Greek historian that lived somewhere around 400 B.C. He traveled all around the world collecting all the folktales, really, because it's got a lot of folktales in it. But some of it is not so folktale-ish. The son of Psammeticus was Necos. Psammeticus was the king that reigned much later, the pharaoh that reigned much later. You ever hear of Pharaoh Necho? He's in our Old Testament, isn't he? Remember? Josiah goes and fights with him. He too became king of Egypt. This is who Herodotus is talking about. And he was first to attempt to dig a canal into the Red Sea. Darius the Persian. You ever hear of Darius the Persian before? Right? The length of it was a journey of 4 days, and the breadth of it was dug so that two trireme can sail in the breadth when rowed. The water comes into the from the Nile, and it comes into from a little above Bubastis, past the Arabian town of Patmos. Now, let me say Pithom and Patmos. Pithom, Patmos. You kind of get it in there, right? It's the consonants that are carried through there. Everybody who reads this and this say, everybody who's smart, smarter than I am, say that these are talking about the same towns. Okay? So, my point is, and I'm saying, when I say everybody, I don't mean people, scholars who actually believe the Bible, but scholars who recognize the Bible, some of it is ancient text. They say, hey, wait a minute, Herodotus talked about the same town. I am saying, you can believe your Bible. It's not that Herodotus gives me the ability to believe my Bible, but he sure does help. It was a real threat. Let's read verse 15. The king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah, and the other was named Puah. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth, and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death, but if it is a daughter, then he shall live. What does this remind us of? This action that he is describing right here, what does it remind us of? Okay, it reminds us of persecution of the Jews when Jesus is born. That is true. That is not at all what I was thinking. It shows you how different people think different things. Modern application. When they're on the birth stool, if it comes out, how do they know it's a son? Ultrasound? No, it's come out. What do? They kill it. What would we call that? What do we allow? Abortion. Partial birth abortion. I don't know how part this is, but they go on to expose. This is a practice that was all over. Verse 17, the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this thing and let the boys live?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife can get to them." So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, Every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive. So plan one didn't work, plan two didn't work, so they go to plan three. And this is a real threat. Acts chapter 7, verse 19, Stephen says they would not survive. If this had gone on, they would not have survived. There's a real problem. Do you remember from a minute ago I said the Egyptians had a certain moral code? It was the Maat, M-A-A-T. It was all over their temples. They also had rejected God, right? They had Ra and Hyrus and other gods, which I won't even try to pronounce. If you reject Jehovah, what do you get to do? Anything you want to. So, beware of this when you're dealing with individuals. If they're not a Christian, if they've rejected God, then don't be surprised when they do anything that they want to. When it comes to government, the United States government. Whatever government, it doesn't matter which one, we live in the United States. The further away from God it goes, the more it gets to do anything that it wants to. And we've seen this, especially in the last several hundred years, repeated many times. Real women. Couldn't leave this chapter without talking about real women. They're put in a position where they are told to disobey God. And what do? The government says, "You sin." And what do? They don't. Because in their minds they're thinking, we had better obey God before men. It applies to women and also to men. Any situation goes. And by the way, how many here are mentioned? How many of these women are mentioned? I don't know how many women there were. Maybe there were only two. Maybe there were only two of all of them that were faithful. I don't know, but just two. Could you imagine if the world had more, I don't even want to pronounce the names, Shiphras and Puas? How much better off the world would be if we had more like them? And then we come to real rewards. What is verse 20? God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied. Because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. If you please God, he will be pleasing to you. This doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get married and have kids. But God will provide for you, ultimately, the greatest family that we could have, our Christian brothers and sisters. Comments? Questions? Anything else from Exodus just chapter 1? Yes, sir?
Just aside, perhaps, but when one rejects Yahweh, one doesn't just run off doing what one wants to do. One falls under the influence of other powers, spiritual powers, not necessarily good ones.
Well, yes, certainly not.
Greed, vain glory, resentment, self-pity, all of those gods that rule our lives, that they are under the...
Yeah, I'd be careful how we use the word God. Because there is only one God. Logically, there is only one God. And God reveals to us in the Bible, there is only one God. There can be only one God. But yes, we fall. The Bible talks about falling under the influence of the doctrines of demons. Excuse me. Falling under the influence of demons by their doctrines. So they cannot directly, not in the new, not now, we don't see it, they cannot directly get us. But by their doctrines. People go around espousing false doctrines, and we come under that influence. Good point. Okay, we'll stop there.
Song number 9, our God is alive. After this, class 3, 2, 12, and
there is beyond the azure blue. Oh, God.
I'm sorry.